This evening, after midnight, there will be a chance for showers and thunderstorms. We'll continue to see areas of fog. The temperature will hold steady in the low 40s. The wind will continue from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, again, unseasonably warm. Showers are likely, and there's a chance of thunderstorms. The patchy fog will continue. The high, 58, and the wind from the south tomorrow at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, colder. Showers are likely with a chance for thunderstorms in the evening. After midnight, there's a chance of rain. The low tomorrow night, 30. The wind will be from the southwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30 miles per hour. Saturday, New Year's Day, mostly sunny, much colder. Look for a high of 32 with the temperature holding steady or slowly falling in the afternoon. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of 18. Sunday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 20s. And the outlook for Sunday night, mostly clear with a low in the upper teens. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 30s to the mid-50s. Rockford reported 40 degrees, in Chicago at O'Hare, 39. Bloomington Normal, 42. Danville, 45. Effingham, 52. Carbondale, 54. It was 43 degrees at the top of the hour in South Bend and Indianapolis. Lafayette checked in with 45. 50 in Terre Haute, 53 at Evansville. Willard Airport reported 45 degrees, cloudy skies. The dew point, 41. The wind out of the south at 21 with gusts to 31. The relative humidity, 86%. The barometer, 29.75 and falling. And at 12:39, 46 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Every day, the U.S. Border Patrol deports thousands of men, women, and children who crossed into the country from Mexico illegally. The U.S. deported more than 400,000 people this year. The scale of the illegal immigration problem has so transformed border communities that even the people who grew up there now find their hometowns unrecognizable. They include NPR's Claudio Sanchez, who grew up on the Mexican side of the border.
The poor, working-class Mexican neighborhood where I was born isn't far from the 12-foot-high fence that separates Nogales, Arizona from Nogales, Sonora, Mexico. The dusty streets of Colonia Ingenieros seem more narrow now, with dozens of homes still perched miraculously on a rocky hillside. Ilegales, men and women from all parts of Mexico, would come through here when I was a child. They'd knock on our door to ask for food and water on their trek north before vanishing into the nearby hills and gullies that people now call Cocaine Alley. Today, no one dares open their doors, let alone help these people. Fear trumps charity. When I was a kid, though, my friends and I would venture unafraid into the desert hills with wads of flour tortillas in our pockets that we could trade for a story or two about where these ilegales were headed. Phoenix, Los Angeles, Chicago, Kansas City, places I knew nothing about, though I imagined them to be beautiful, fluorescent cities. I'm sure people died trying to cross illegally back then, but the numbers today are unbelievable. Last July was especially gruesome. 59 bodies found in the desert ended up at the Pima County Medical Examiner's Office in Tucson. It was the second deadliest month on record for the area. Cause of death? Exposure to the heat? Hyperthermia in most cases. I've come back to my hometown for the first time in years to, once again, look into the faces of these men and women. Although on this day, my only encounter is with those who've been deported. I wait on the Mexican side, and from a distance, I see three U.S. Border Patrol vans drive up and empty their human cargo, 25 to 30 people. They pass through a gate where Mexican government agents in orange windbreakers are there to welcome them back home. They board an old school bus. I get in a cab and follow them through downtown Nogales, Sonora, past empty restaurants and shuttered shops. The place that made my favorite Mexican sandwiches, tortas, is gone. So are the Americans who used to spend their money here. But it's not just that. Everything about this once quaint tourist town looks and feels surreal. Heavily armed soldiers and police cruisers line the main drag. They look ill at ease, waiting perhaps for their next encounter with drug smugglers, who are intent on showing who's really in control. Sadly, my hometown has morphed into no man's land. The bus I've been following for the last 15 minutes finally arrives at an open-air shed attached to a tiny office run by Grupo Beta. It's a government-sponsored agency charged, among other things, with registering and debriefing deportados.
Los baños para las mujeres está aquí adentro, ¿sí?
In his welcoming remarks, a gaunt elderly man, Beta agent Roberto Montiel, begins with a lecture about the importance of keeping the bathrooms clean. The men and women sit on wooden benches, their shoulders slumped, their clothes tattered and dusty. A little girl rests her head on her mother's bosom. She has a bad case of pink eye and bug bites all over her swollen face.
¿Cómo te llamas?
Sofía.
Sofía. ¿Cómo te sientes, Sofía?
Bien.
The little girl's name is Sofía. She's 3 years old. Her mother, in her early 20s, says her name is María del Rayo Hernández from Mexico City.
¿A dónde querían ir?
A Nueva Jersey. Sí, ahí está el papá de la niña y toda su familia.
¿Y ahora qué pasa con ustedes? ¿Qué va a pasar?
No, nos regresamos a México.
Her plan was to spend the holidays in New Jersey with her little girl's father. Now, Hernández says, she'll have to go back home to Mexico City. Crossing illegally is too dangerous, she says, which is what Agent Montiel has been saying all morning.
Hay que tener cuidado ahí, le digo, no hagan confianza a la gente, a los migrantes.
And now that you're back in Mexico, he warns, don't let your guard down. Don't trust anybody. You see, Montiel continues, no matter how harrowing you thought your experience was on the U.S. side of the desert, there are people on the Mexican side who will prey on you. They'll kidnap you, he says, lock you up in a cheap hotel and hold you for ransom, demanding $3,000, sometimes $5,000.
Les piden de 3,000 a 5,000 dólares, ¿sí? Para que los puedan rescatar.
According to Beta and Mexico's Human Rights Commission, the number of migrants abducted in the last year and a half was 9,758, a number that gets bigger every year. Is there a place to eat? Asks one man in the group. About a mile up the street from Grupo Beta's office, the Kino Border Initiative, a binational group funded by the Catholic Church, has set up a makeshift cafeteria under a tent large enough to feed 200 people.
Muchachos, si quieres pasar en este lado y formarse al segundo número. Lupe!
A Jesuit priest runs the place, Father Peter Neely, a stocky man with a thick white beard. Volunteers from local churches and Bank of America today have prepared breakfast. A plate of refried beans, scrambled eggs, a small bowl of potato soup, corn tortillas, and a glass of sweet Jamaica water. Father Neely says relief operations like this one are now common on the border.
Tijuana has stuff, Mexicali has stuff, Juarez, they all have these kind of services. But Nogales, when they started deporting more people through the desert, you know, that's when we saw the big need here and get, you know, people, you know, fed and clothed.
I don't want to get in the way here.
Yep.
I think
we're ready to go.
Para no tardar más, vamos a empezar como siempre con una oración.
Father Neely blesses the meal and offers a simple prayer. We ask that you bless your sons and daughters, protect them against all evil, so they can reach their home safely. Crossing into the U.S. illegally is not a sin, says Neely. It's a misdemeanor. But the penalty for many is death. And it dawns on me. In my encounters with ilegales 50 years ago, people on their way north did sometimes talk about the risk of being left to die in the desert. But they mostly talked about hope and a better life. As a child growing up in Mexico, I suppose that's why I latched on to those stories, convinced that just beyond that 12-foot-high fence that separates Mexico from the United States, beautiful fluorescent cities beckoned. And yes, in my innocence, I believed they were even worth dying for. Claudia Sanchez, NPR News.
It's 12:46. The concert industry struggled this year. The industry tracking publication Pollstar announced this week that the number of tickets sold in North America dropped by about 12% over 2009. NPR's Zoe Chase has more.
It's not bad for everyone. The rich are getting richer. People who make money touring make a lot of money. Exhibit A. Bon Jovi made the most money from their concerts, with a take of more than $200 million. Not just in North America, but everywhere. Followed closely by... Oh, AC/DC, U2, and Lady Gaga. But for pretty much everyone else, it was a lousy year, with an overall 12% drop in concert revenue. Even in the summer, the time when musicians usually make most of their money, many big-name performers canceled tour dates. Pop star Rihanna was one, or canceled their entire tours, like Christina Aguilera. What happened? This year, some stars got a little too big for their britches, as Pollstar editor Gary Bongiovanni tells it.
2009 was not a bad year for the concert business. Based on that and the expectation that the economy would improve in 2010, a number of artists decided to go back to pushing the envelope.
Artists like the Jonas Brothers, who returned to markets they had just played and charged more for tickets. People wouldn't buy them. As a result, some promoters started heavily discounting tickets just before the show to fill seats.
It really undermines your business because you're training people to wait for the sale that's going to come later and not buy the tickets when they first go on sale. In addition to that, the hardcore fans that do buy tickets when they first go on sale and pay full price tend to get alienated.
So next year, there might be a correction to 2010's apparently inflated ticket prices. But that won't help Pink Floyd fans who are willing to pay $126 to see the 30th anniversary of The Wall. Zoe Chase, NPR News.
The holidays are a busy time. Decorating, shopping, traveling to visit with family or friends. WILL is there, too, keeping you informed and entertained as you wind down the year. Your tax-deductible gift right now helps ensure the news and music services you depend on are there for you in 2011. Take a moment now to make your tax-deductible gift online at willpledge.org. And thanks.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 30th of December, 2010. It's the birthday of Rudyard Kipling, born in Bombay, 1865, author of The Jungle Book and many other books. Rudyard Kipling, who said, "If history were taught in the form of stories, it would never be forgotten." It's the birthday of the poet and the winner of a National Book Award this year, Patti Smith, born Chicago, during the Great Blizzard of 1946. Raised in New Jersey, a Jehovah's Witness, daughter of a waitress and a factory worker, read a lot of books growing up, fairy tales and biographies, travel books about Tibet and the Himalayas. Went to work right out of high school on a factory assembly line, got pregnant at the age of 19, gave her child up for adoption, moved to New York City, had no money when she got there, so just walked around the city, went to Washington Square and Tompkins Square Park.